that concludes the formal presentations from the session. And there have a couple questions have come in already, so I think I will just I'll just go through these. And the first question that came in was for, I believe, Dr. Durrell. And basically that is, do public health facilities include FQHC and community health centers, or are they only public health departments?
Providers, they could self-identify in the provider questionnaire, and they could describe themselves as either federally qualified health centers, migrant, community, or rural clinics, or public health department clinic. All of those would be considered public health facilities.
Okay, thank you. The next question that came in, I will send to Dr. Dunn, and this question is for women, and maybe it was answered already in your presentation because it came in an earlier, during one of the earlier presentations, but for women, generally speaking, up until which age does vaccination make sense?
So the recommendations are for vaccination through age 26 years, and for a number of reasons, that the licensing, but also the clinical trials have demonstrated efficacy and immunogenicity through age 26 years. I hope that answers the question.
And if that does not, you can submit a further question on the Q&A line. Okay, so the next question, is the reason that vaccine rates are higher for MCV4 and Tdap compared to HPV is that most states require Tdap and MCV4. Is there any talk about making HPV vaccination a requirement in Texas or other states? Does anyone want to? I can address that if none of the speakers feel they want to. So let me just state that is true, of course, that there are some states that have requirements, not all, for MCV4 and Tdap, and that clearly would contribute to higher coverage. I think many people know that when after licensure in 2006, after the recommendation, there was some early push to have HPV vaccine required for school entry, and that was resulted in a tremendous amount of controversy. Right now, there are two states, two jurisdictions, Washington, D.C. and Virginia, that have a very loose, I would say, HPV vaccine requirements for school entry, and that they have a very broad opt-out provision. But there has not been a recent huge effort or movement for making HPV vaccination a requirement in additional states. I think there was people in general felt that there needed to be more experience and information, and there was quite a lot of pushback when the efforts were made to introduce school immunization requirements.
Dr. Markowitz, could I just make a quick comment? If the person who asked that question is interested, there's a website, the National Conference of State Legislatures, or the NCSL, has a website that very nicely summarizes all the state legislation related to HPV vaccines. On that website, it says that about half of states have introduced legislation to mandate HPV vaccines, but again, very few have passed that legislation. So if you're interested, if you just Google NCSL HPV vaccine, you'll find all the legislation related to HPV vaccines, if you're curious.
Yes, I'm glad you brought that. But again, a lot of those efforts were made several years ago, and there haven't been a lot of new efforts for bringing forward mandates for HPV. Okay, so the next question is, can newborns become infected with HPV? Do any of our speakers want to take that question?
Yeah, I can answer that. Yes. It rarely can happen, but there has been noted transmission from mother to child, and it's found to be very uncommon, but it can occur. The most serious repercussions of that is potential development of RRP later in childhood, but again, RRP is a very, very rare condition, and also transmission from mother to child is rare.
Okay, and then I think this is our last question because I think we'll be cut off soon, but do data for VFC eligibles less likely to initiate or complete HPV vaccination? Does this reflect all vaccines or just HPV vaccine? I think Dr. Durrell, you could address that.
Yeah, I'll try to do that quickly. To clarify, the data was only regarding HPV vaccination in the presentation, and for VFC eligible, we divided that by those who were insured and not insured. We found that those who were uninsured were unlikely to initiate or complete it. Those who were VFC eligible and insured were more likely to initiate. But I can definitely give more information on that if the person wants to follow up.
Okay, that's great. Well, I think we're going to be cut off soon because we were given till 4:05. So I'd like to thank all the speakers again. And again, I believe that you can submit questions online and they can be addressed by the speakers at a later date. Thank you, everyone.